What's your thought process going into it, to a co-write of how you approach writing a song?
Man, I've been asked that question a bunch, and
Hey everybody, thanks for joining us today. Clay and I have been traveling a lot, so we're going to run an interview that we did a little while ago with Rivers Rutherford, monster hit writer. He's got a lot of great things to say, and I think you'll really enjoy him.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Songtown Studio. We got Rivers Rutherford as our special guest tonight. Rivers is an old friend and co-writer. We've written a good number of songs together. And he's one of the most talented singer-songwriter people I've ever met.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
That's a kind comment.
And I didn't know. So, when we co-write, we don't usually do a whole lot of research on each other. But since I was going to interview you, I did some research on you today and read that you grew up three blocks from Graceland.
Yes.
Is this correct?
Yeah, about four, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure did,
three,
yeah.
Four. Well, see, they lied on that.
Yeah,
they always exaggerate on this.
Well, it was probably me. But yeah, sure did. My dad was 16 when Elvis bought Graceland,
really?
and he lived next door, and it was a little house, but he lived next door to Graceland, and so my grandmother and grandfather kind of got to know the Presleys a little bit, and my dad, just by being around, and I remember in probably 1971, I would have been 3 or 4 years old, we were riding down Highway 50, well, Elvis Presley Boulevard, and my dad said, "There's Elvis," and he pulled over, and it was all I remember is he had jet black hair, and he had on a blue shirt, and he was on a white horse, and we got to talk to him from that.
Really, was he in his yard?
Or yeah, he was just riding a horse around.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah. The horse was looking back over; he kept nibbling it. That was his leg, kind of biting at him, And Elvis was like, "Horse, quit nibbling my leg." I remember that. I don't know why. Hey, I was in Glenn Rutherford. This is my son, Rivers, And he said, "Hey, how you doing, son?" That old deal.
Let's talk a little bit about your songwriting process, because I think everybody watching this are songwriters, so I know they're going to want to hear what's your thought process going into it, to a co-write, of how you approach writing a song?
Man, I've been asked that question a bunch, and I can give you answers. I don't know. There's some things that are kind of common, but they're not rules by any stretch of the imagination. They're just kind of... So Virginia Woolf, I think they asked her one time, "What are you scared of?" And she said, "Coming down the stairs in the morning." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, because when I come down the stairs, the first thing I do is I sit down at my typewriter and start writing. And my typewriter's up against the living room window. It looks out through the neighborhood, and..." She said, "I never know if I'm going to sit down and start writing and I'm going to be Virginia Woolf, the internationally celebrated, novelist and essayist, or if I'm going to be a middle-aged woman in a bathrobe looking out a window." And every write I try, I'm scared. You go, "Oh, gosh, well, how's this going to go?" And that's not a very healthy way to approach it. But
so sometimes you feel like a middle-aged woman in a bathrobe?
Well, don't tell anybody that, but yeah, sometimes,
That's what I gained
from
that
story.
That's
kind of a dream of mine.
Well, what excites you about an idea when you're in a co-write?
If I hadn't heard it before.
Okay.
That's what I look for. I look for something I hadn't heard before or an angle I hadn't thought about before. And when those come to me or when somebody across the room from me suggests it, that's like a little sip of something good,
Yeah.
And then you get into it and anything I'm working on I think is good or I wouldn't be working on it. But when you're on one, it's good. There's just a high that comes with it, and I don't get that as often as I'd like. When I was younger, I didn't know what was good. Well, I thought I did, but I'm 50 years old. I've been paid to do this for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Come mid-May, and when I get that feeling, that's why I do it. And obviously, I've got a family. I like to do fun things. I want to make some money,
Mm-hmm.
But that high is just—it's not like any other high. It's like we did this. We made this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something cool. There you go.
That still makes me high when I listen to that.
Yeah, I love that song too.
I do too.
So, what kind of person do you write with best, do you think?
Well, I always say that in a co-writing relationship, there are two skill sets. And some people have both, or some degree thereof. And you do. I think that I think I've got both, but I'm way heavy on the. You know, I'm pretty good at looking at whether it's an idea or bringing an idea in or whatever. But once we establish the idea, I'm really good at looking at it and saying, I know how to say this in a way that is going to make it appeal. And you know, here's a really fertile patch of ground that I think would have some emotional impact to it. And we'll dig over here instead of over here, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there's other people who... I think are almost producers that, you know, they can hear something and go, that's good, but it's not going to work. And I'll tell you why. And, you know, and that I do as well, but I don't think that's my talent. My talent is making stuff. I would be what they refer to around here as like an artist writer, you know? And, I look for people who are stronger in that suit. My buddy, George Tarrin, he and I have written, more number ones with George than I have with anybody else. And he can wear both hats as easily and as comfortably as ever. But I'm more comfortable wearing the artist hat. But when the two of us get together, we'll get there, and I don't even pay attention to who's doing what, because we're trading hats so fast, I don't even know who's wearing what hat, you know. It just kind of works. It's a chemistry thing.
I've used you as an example, not by name, but when I've work with people that are writing, you know, say one of the jobs that you can do in a co-write a lot of times is be that kind of the editor. And I feel like when we've written, you know, you will get this creative burst and you just start taking off, and I'm trying to like write down the great things, you know, so that we can go back and go, these are gold right here, let's build on that.
And that's exactly what I look for in a co-write. And other people are different, you know. I've written with a lot of guys who they'll come with an idea. Kelly Lovelace, he'll tell you, he's an idea man. Mm-hmm. And man, when you write with him, it's always fun, because I might have an idea, I might not, but I know he's going to have one.
Right.
And it's going to be good. Mm-hmm. You want to hear a story in a song?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
If it's good.
Well, I don't know if it's any good or not, but this is, I play a song. When I got to college, you know, nobody was going to be a songwriter when they graduated. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know what I was going to do, and everybody there is asking, what you going to do, what you majoring in? I go, well, right now, music, you know. Oh, you going to teach? I go, nah. What are you going to do? Well, like, you going to be a concert pianist or something? And I said, no. What are you going to do? I said, I don't know. I mean, I always wanted to be in music, but it just, nobody else was doing it. I thought, well, maybe nobody does that anymore. I don't know what I was thinking. Decided to go to law school, and my dad started worrying. And he saved the world from saved me from a lot of malpractice suits. He called me one day and said, there's a woman named Tony Wine, who's teaching a class at University of Memphis. It's a 4-week deal, once a week, on songwriting. Do you want to do it? And I said, and I was still writing, but I what are you talking about? Well, I thought you might be interested. And I said, yeah, I think I do. He said, well, I'll go over there the first one to sign you up. And I was in exams, you know. So I came back for the second one, and I met a guy named Chips Moman. His wife was teaching the class, and Chips was a legendary record producer, guitar player, songwriter. He says, I'll give you $100 a week to write songs for me. And I was 20 years old. I said, I'll take it. And but he made me promise I'd go back and finish my senior year, you know. So when I went back to school, he called me one day. He said, have you ever heard of the Highwaymen? And I said, no. He said, you ever heard of the Highwaymen? I said, He said, you ever heard the song The Highwayman? I said, nope. And he says, you really don't like country music, do you? And I said, no, sir. And I can't believe I said that looking back, but I did, but I wasn't a fan. You know? Mm-hmm. He says, go buy The Highwaymen and write me the sequel. This will be a good exercise for you. So I went and bought a cassette tape and listened to it, and I wrote what I thought was going to be the sequel. And I played it for him, and he said, that's good. And so he called me a couple weeks later. He says, can you be in Nashville at this address on Monday? I said, sure. And I skipped class. I drove up here to Nashville, and I went to what used to be Emerald Studio, mm-hmm. and which is where we wrote Love Is Like Rain, I believe.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But... I walked in, and when I opened the door, there's Willie Nelson and Waylon Jennings and Johnny Cash and Chris Christopherson. And I'm like a college kid, you know, a black leather jacket and a mullet, you know. And they didn't know what to make of me. The room went dead silent. And Chip says, "Rip, play your song for these boys." And I'm looking around, and I look over to my right, and there's Glenn Campbell. And I had my guitar in my hand. I said, "Well, Mr. Campbell, may I borrow your capo?" I got down on my knee, and I played my song. When I got finished, Christopherson, he was kind of quiet. Christopherson said, "Well, hell, that's right up our alley." And that was the sweetest thing I've ever heard in my life, you know. So I sang it with their band, you know, and they got the track, and Johnny Cash went out to sing his part, and he wouldn't have any trouble. He just was a very classy, cool guy, and he says, "Hey, kid, why don't you come out here and teach me how to sing this thing?" So I got in this little booth with Johnny Cash, and I was teaching him how to sing. Yeah, it was crazy.
You didn't wet your pants, did you?
Well, I don't tell anybody. But when I came in, that's exactly what Waylon Jennings said. He said, "Hey, kid," he says, "were you scared out there in that little room with Johnny Cash?" And I was not going to give it up for anybody. I was so scared. I said, "There are people. Just be. You're just with a bunch of your buddies at a party. Just be as normal as you can be." And I said, "No, I wasn't scared." And he looked at me kind of like my dad did, you know. Mm-hmm. He gave me that old once over, and he says, "Shit." This was the first song I had recorded. Johnny Cash said, "I am a shotgun rider for the San Jacinto Lion. The desert is my brother. My skin is cracked and dry. I was riding on full coach, and everything was fine till we took a shorter road to save some time. The bandits only fine once they shot me in the chest. They may have wounded me, but they'll never get the best of better men. And I'll ride again." And then Waylon said, "I am a river gambler. I make a living dealing cards. My clothes are smooth and honest, but my heart is cold and hard. I was shuffling for some Delta boys on a boat for New Orleans. I was the greatest shark they'd ever seen. But the captain bumped a sandbar and an ace fell from my sleeve. They threw me overboard as I swore I didn't cheat, but I could swim. I make a living off the land. I ride a John Deere tractor. I'm a liberated man. But the rain, it hasn't fallen since the middle of July. And if it don't come soon, my crops will die. The bankman says he likes me, but there's nothing he can do. He tells me that he's coming, but the clouds are coming too. Tribe is Cherokee. My forefathers loved this land. They left it here for me. But the white men came with boats and trains and his dirty factories and poisoned my existence with his deeds. Nature is our mother. We are sucklings at her breast. And he who tries to beat her will lose her to the rest. They'll never win.
Wow.
Thank you.
That was awesome. So you were how old when that was recorded?
21. Yeah.
Okay, so what's, I mean, where do you go from those guys cutting your song?
It's been a disappointing career.
After that, it's all downhill. So, now what happened after that?
Well, I started shopping for condos overlooking the Mississippi River, thinking I was going to make $1 million. And I think after about a year, my grand total was about $15,000, and that was most of that was for playing on the album. You know, it was a nice. I did get a decent royalty check. It was a single. It wasn't. I mean, it was $5,000, and I framed it. And I said, "No, I can't frame this. I got to put this money to work." I was just, you know. But it was 8 years, a wife, and 2 children before I had a song recorded again.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a long, long, strange trip. I did every job I could think of. I wrote jingles. I got a break and got somebody who said, "I'll pay you $200 to write a jingle for me." You know, I got really fired up about it, and then I played it for me. So, "I'll give you another $200 if you'll sing it." It was like a Western sizzling ad.
No, really?
Yeah, it ran everywhere. But I worked in a plant nursery for a while at agricultural minimum, which is, you know, less than minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And I did, you know, I would pack up my car with all the gear I had, and I'd drive to Birmingham and Jackson, Mississippi, and Oxford, Memphis, and Jackson, Tennessee, and back to Nashville, and I'd, you know, about every 6 weeks, and try to make some money. And it was brutal. I moved here in 93, and I got my first publishing deal in 96. Well, when I came here, I was still writing for Chips, and I got a record deal quick. I'd been here about 6 months, and I got a record deal, but, you know, I got my advance. It wasn't very much. Back then, they were giving record deals to anybody that was willing to get
them. You might walk by.
Yeah, exactly. So it was brutal. It's tough. It's a tough way to make a living.
I think a lot of times people don't see the sacrifice. They just see the successful, you know, things that make the news, or, you know.
Man, I wish I could just knock off tomorrow and go play golf. I've heard that a bunch.
Yeah,
know.
Exactly.
Tell you what, why don't you write about 10,000 songs and then move to Nashville and start working and see how that goes for you.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, to be a successful songwriter, you've got to wrestle. You wrestle with yourself.
Ah.
You wrestle with your beliefs.
Yes.
You wrestle with insecurity, you know, and that all of those things at the end of the day are what give you the possibility of tomorrow going out writing a hit song.
That's it.
Because you're wrestling with real stuff, and you're putting that into songs, however pretty or ugly that might be, you know. And
that's where the good stuff comes from, though.
Yeah.
When I got inspired, instead of saying I'm going to write every day, I'd write about 12 songs a year. And when I said, okay, I'm gonna get busy on this thing, I still didn't write every day, but I'd write 25. And then when I started co-writing in earnest, it was 125. I mean, the power of two people versus one is just that much more effective. It's five times as effective. You may not get the same kind of song, and I think there are some songs that are you better off just writing by yourself. But it takes a lot longer. It's a lot harder. It's a lot lonelier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot more fun to co-write, I think.
It's a lot more fun. I like people.
A lot less like work.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Check out the show notes. You can find a link to our sponsor, Sweetwater. Sweetwater is the best place to get gear, instruments, all that kind of stuff. You've also got links to some books that Clay and I have written about songwriting and to Songtown itself. Hope you'll check us out. See you soon.